If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 2 through 7, purchase the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Follow Mary and Joseph, the donkey, the innkeeper, and the shepherds to discover that this special baby is the Savior, born for you and me. Learn more about Angel, Angel, What Do You See? By calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or at issuesetc.org. Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. President Trump has been very active in appointing judges to the judiciary. Why is it, though, that a judge appointed and confirmed for a relatively obscure position, a useful position, but a relatively obscure position, is getting the opposition of all the progressive media? Joining us to talk about media opposition to a Trump judicial appointment over IVF and surrogacy, Katie Faust. She's founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us, and she's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "We Need More Judges Who Realize How Monetizing Wombs Hurt Women and Children." Katie, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
How have the progressive media reacted to the confirmation of Sarah Pitlick to the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Missouri?
Yeah, well, I wrote in the article, it seems they have lost their collective minds. I get a daily alert, a daily Google alert on the topic of surrogacy. So anything that's written about surrogacy comes through once a day in my email. And for 3 days, you know, all I saw was outrage from liberal outlets, you know, the Daily Beast and Bustle and Huffington Post and Mother Jones and Jezebel, all of them were decrying that we've just confirmed a federal judge who is against infertility treatments. You have celebrities like Andy Cohen, who created a child through surrogacy, talking about how he was outraged by this. So it drew quite a lot of attention from the liberal media.
So has Judge Pitlick actually said that she's against IVF and surrogacy? What has she actually said?
So this is the quote that they are referring to. So what she says is that IVF and surrogacy leads to diminished respect for motherhood and the unique mother-child bond. It leads to the exploitation of women and to the commodification of gestation and of children themselves. So that's her actual quote.
And does that mean that she is against treating infertility?
So that really deserves to be parsed out a bit. We tend to think that, you know, oh, if you're infertile, right, well, that justifies making children in laboratories. But really, everybody is for being treated for the causes of infertility. There's a myriad of different reasons why people have a hard time conceiving. Oftentimes, you can dig down and discover the cause of that. But what she opposes, and obviously what my organization, Them Before Us, opposes, is manufacturing children in laboratories. That is almost always a child commodifying process. And that's what she is referring to. That is what leads to the commodification of children and for diminishing respect for motherhood and disregard of the mother-child bond. So she's 100% right about that.
Let's go through her statements kind of one by one. And if you would, give us some examples of how she's right on this. Give us an example or two of how IVF and surrogacy lead to a diminished respect for motherhood and the mother-child bond.
Well, surrogacy especially, right? That is really where we see the commodification of women and their womb being used really just to gestate. You know, there's all these really kind of disturbing pro-surrogacy articles talking about how women are just the oven and it's somebody else's bun. Well, that's not actually how the child views things. When you're talking about like mother-child bond and the development that takes place between mother and child in utero. And so that has to be respected and protected. But IVF and surrogacy has allowed us to separate mother and child in a way that's never been done before. And so one of the examples that I give in the article is this huge conference called Men Having Babies. And it's a conference, it's an organization that goes all around the world to lots of different cities, and it markets surrogacy and egg donor services to men who want to create motherless children. This is an industry that would never be possible without surrogacy. And it is something that is not just being kind of permitted, but it's being promoted. A lot of it's being promoted among like the pro-LGBT wings of the medical world and the world of politics. Something that would never be possible before without surrogacy. The thought of creating an intentionally motherless child should horrify all of us. But because of surrogacy, you know, it's now sort of a hallmark of being progressive and modern. So that's not a treatment for infertility. That is manufacturing motherless children, and it does come courtesy of surrogacy.
Give us some examples, if you would, of how IVF and surrogacy lead to the exploitation of women.
Well, you know, this is a business. This is a market. We are talking about a branch of the medical world that is 100% elective and for profit. And so this is an industry that is constantly in search of ways to make its product and its services cheaper. When it comes to gathering sperm and egg and womb, the hardest part of those three things to acquire is a woman who will rent her uterus for 9.5 months. Now, renting the uterus of women in the United States is expensive. That's why a lot of fertility services have gone overseas to Nepal and India and Cambodia and Thailand, because the wombs of brown women are cheaper than the wombs of white women. And so they have set up shop in all of these different overseas markets. And within a few years, all of these countries have realized, wait a second, rich white couples are coming to this country to exploit our women, oftentimes with very little safeguards around the women's health that are being used as incubators for these wealthy overseas couples. And so one by one, these countries have shut down their surrogacy businesses. But even here in the United States, what you see is a drastic divide between the people who are buying the wombs and the people who are renting the wombs. I mean, Kim Kardashian is not going to be anybody's surrogate, right? What you're seeing is military wives and economically vulnerable women here in the United States. Those are the people that tend to serve as surrogates. Lots of celebrity couples are renting, and it's the economically vulnerable women here in this country who are providing the wombs.
Give us some examples of how IVF and surrogacy lead to the commodification of gestation and even then of children themselves.
Well, I think that people don't really understand what goes on in the IVF world. I think that they just think sperm and egg and baby and poof, you know, yay, we have this child for an infertile couple. But what they don't realize is there's a lot of commodification that goes into creating children to begin with. I talk in the article about how sex selection is very common. You know, you create multiple embryos and then you decide, do we want two girls or two boys? That oftentimes multiple embryos are implanted, and maybe they implant four, hoping that two will take, but you know what? All four take. And then they have to figure out, oh my gosh, now we have to selectively reduce, which means abort, you know, between 12 and 20 weeks. And then usually that involves some calculation of, well, boy, we've got three male embryos that are developing and one female embryo. Well, we'd really like a boy and a girl, so let's abort two of the male embryos. Even the process of embryo transfer into the womb involves some eugenics, sex selection, you know, trying to figure out which embryos are the most viable. And so there's this eugenics aspect of IVF. And that's all even without surrogacy. But then you go over to surrogacy, and now you're really talking about putting together embryos and womb. And it really does lead to the commodification of gestation. Now, you want to talk about the commodification of children? That is the area where we put the most emphasis at Them Before Us, because our organization is made up of children created through sperm and egg donation, or that's one demographic that we focus on, one demographic that we serve. And when you read the stories of kids who are created through especially sperm and egg donation, this is not circumstances that lead to children feeling like they were respected as whole persons from the moment of conception. And so in that article, I've listed several different quotes of children created through sperm and egg donation and surrogacy, talking about how the circumstances of their conception made them feel like products, made them feel like items that were shopped for and purchased and assembled, because they actually were.
How do you respond to someone who says, well, a lot of these arguments that you have made here can be used against adoption?
When I talk about the importance of biological bonds between parents and children, a lot of people, especially those in the pro-life world, who rightly understand that adoption can be incredibly redemptive and that it is the job of Christians especially to care for the most vulnerable among us, right? That hearing that biological bonds need to be respected and protected, that that's a threat to adoption. And it's actually the exact opposite, that I'm an adoptive mom. I worked in an adoption agency before I became a mom. And so I understand that it is very important, especially for Christians, to recognize that when a child has lost a relationship with their mother and father due to tragedy, the right thing to do is to bring that child into your home so that you can seek to mend that wound. But none of us should have any illusions that there is a wound. Right, most of us who have children who are adopted, even if it's from the moment of birth, we recognize that this child in our home that we love so much had to lose something that was so important to him before he could join our family. And that's a loss that me, as an adoptive mom, I can never fully compensate for what my son has lost before he joined our family. And so adoption seeks to mend this wound. When you're talking about donor conception and surrogacy, that is creating the wound. Donor conception and surrogacy intentionally separates children from their genetic father, their genetic mother, or in the case of surrogacy, their birth mother. And adoptees have long referred to that as a primal wound. Right? A wound that goes right to the heart of what it means to be a human child. And it's something that they report that affects them throughout the rest of their life. And so we talk a lot about how adoption is an institution that seeks to meet the needs of children. But IVF, reproductive technology, surrogacy is a market that is designed to meet the desires of adults. In both situations, children suffer loss. But in one situation, the adults who are raising the children are seeking to mend that loss. And in the other situation, the people raising the children are the ones who created that loss.
So you say that IVF and surrogacy are not about babies. What do you mean by that, Katie?
This is a hard topic for people who are consider themselves pro-life, who consider themselves Christians, even just run-of-the-mill conservatives. We love babies. Right? Our fertility rates among conservatives reveal that. Like, we love babies. We're having more kids because we recognize that children are a gift. But IVF and surrogacy is not about babies. It is about on-demand designer babies shipped worldwide. That there is very, very few scenarios where a couple is using IVF and reproductive technologies in a way where no child's right to life is violated, where no child's right to be known and loved by their mother and father is violated, where no child's right to be connected to their birth mother for life is being violated. It routinely involves child commodifying aspects, and it's just not a child-friendly process. I mean, I tell people, if you can use reproductive technologies in a way where no child has to die, there's no eugenics involved. You know, there's no surplus embryos that are frozen. There's no donors. The child never has to sacrifice a relationship with their birth parent. Then God bless you. The reality is that that scenario I just described is completely cost prohibitive. So most people don't do it. In IVF, children are almost always made to pay so that adults can have the family that they want. And that is an injustice. And so we need to be very clear-eyed about what's actually involved when we're talking about reproductive technologies, IVF, and surrogacy.
So how do we go about treating infertility, coping with it in some cases, without resorting to methods that lead to diminished respect for motherhood, the exploitation of women, and the commodification of gestation and of children?
Well, you know, there are medical professionals who are devoted to seeking to uncover the root causes of the infertility, you know, whether that is endometriosis or low sperm count or whatever else. There's lots of different reasons why people struggle to get pregnant. You know, one of those is called NAPRO technology, and their success rates are much higher than IVF, depending on what they're seeking to treat. And so I would encourage people to go and figure out, like, what's really causing this infertility? How can I resolve it? And you know what? Overall, women tend to be healthier as a result, whereas IVF kind of skips over the cause of the infertility and goes straight to creating babies in laboratories. Interestingly, that keeps people dependent on their fertility doctors instead of resolving the issue so that their bodies can produce children naturally. Now, sometimes you can't treat the infertility. Sometimes the answer is just no, because sometimes there is no way to resolve that without commodifying children. And in those situations, for people who consider themselves pro-life or Christian, that is where you simply have to say, I'm not going to make a child pay for my struggles and my problems. And that's the expectation at them before us that we have of all adults, gay or straight, single or married, fertile or infertile. At them before us, we say, all adults need to respect the rights of all children. No adult gets a pass. All adults need to respect and recognize these fundamental rights of children, so that their right to life and right to be known and loved by their mother and father is protected. And at some point, that means that every adult is going to have to make some sacrifices. But you know what? That's exactly how it's supposed to be. Adults are the ones who are supposed to be sacrificing so children don't have to.
Katie Faust is founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us. She's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, We Need More Judges Who Realize How Monetizing Wombs Hurts Women and Children. You can find a link to this column and to Them Before Us at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Katie, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
We'll be going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line next. If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 2 through 7, purchase the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Follow Mary and Joseph, the donkey, the innkeeper, and the shepherds to discover that this special baby is the Savior, born for you and me. Learn more about Angel, Angel, What Do You See? By calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or at issuesetc.org. Angel, Angel, What Do You See?
Ad Crucem offers Bible-based, Christ-focused Christmas ornaments in various sizes for church and home. Use our Jesse Tree collection to teach your children this Advent and see our new premium ornaments, a crucifixion tableau, angel and shepherds, the Holy Family, Epiphany, and much more. Visit adcrucem.com for unique and theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and housewares. That's adcrucem.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world.
To view a variety of nativity sets, visit outdoornativitystore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store, outdoornativitystore.com.